Welcome to the Kayak Mainline Podcast. David's no officer, and I'm certainly no gentleman. And folks, you've got nowhere else to go.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the latest edition of Kayak Mainline. My name is Kelly Blades, and the alpha to my omega, as always.
Hey, how you doing? This is David Johnston. I'm really excited to be here.
You should be excited. I'm excited about having you here.
Oh, well, thank you.
This has been a whirlwind cavalcade weekend for the both of us, hasn't it?
It really has been. I feel as though we've been together since Wednesday.
Well, you know, as it turns out, we have been pretty much with each other since Wednesday because both of us were at the Great Lakes Sea Kayak Symposium up in, where was that? Where was that, David?
Grand Marais, Michigan.
Not Grand Marais, Minnesota.
No, as I thought we were originally going to.
As a matter of fact, it's 10 hours apart. And you made that mistake years ago, right?
Yeah, totally. To a near heart attack. When we were originally planning to drive and getting the maps off Google the day before we were ready to go. And all of a sudden I was like, 20 hours? We can't do a 20-hour drive.
No.
It was only 12.
So. Yeah, it was not nearly as bad. But we did have some people who planned the trip and were on their way to Grand Marais, Minnesota when they realized, they checked the schedule or something, and they realized that, no, let's not go there. Let's go to the Grand Marais, Michigan. That's where all the heat is. That's where the action
really is.
Yeah. So did you have a good time there?
I had a fantastic time. How about yourself?
I had just a blisteringly good time. Can I say blistering?
I think so. Now, you were organizing it, so
yes.
How did you hold up? You made it through okay?
I did, and this was the smoothest we have ever. I'm not saying it was smooth. I'm just saying that this was the smoothest that we did. And the cool thing, what I really liked about it is anything that wasn't smooth, Bill and I were the – Bill Thompson is the official organizer of it. He and I were the only ones who noticed. Nobody else saw any glitches whatsoever. So I was really pleased with what we did.
Well, like they say, fake it till you make it. It's the best way to go.
Well, and that's what I did is I faked it till I made – is that right? Maked it? That's not right.
Fake it till you make it?
I can't – yeah. Oh, well, I'll defer to you on that one. But, one of the beautiful things about this symposium is the amount of instructors that we have who are really top-notch. So we had you. And I can't think of any other coaches. I can't – really, you complete me. There were no other coaches as far as I know. There. Who else was there, David? There was, Michael Party.
Michael Party was there.
the infamous, more than famous.
Yep.
Michael Party. Eric Ogard.
Yeah, he was there. Ben Lowry. The future Globetrotter, Danny Mongo, was there.
Future.
Who we interviewed a couple episodes ago.
We did, yes. He is powerfully built, that one. He did the cool thing about Danny is he came up for Thursday, Friday. He had to go drive 8 hours and then race a stand-up board race afterwards. So that guy is just a warrior, yeah.
Really? Yeah. How did he do at the race?
Fourth overall, third in his class, from what I understand.
Okay.
Yes.
There were three people in the race?
Three, at least. At least three people, and two of which were children. So it was very difficult. No, we had a great time up there. I think all around the joint, it was a good time, and all the participants had a great time. I think I've not heard from the grumpy ones who didn't have a good time.
Mm. Well, I only saw a couple of people crying in the corner,
and that was because you jilted them.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So here's the big question for you: did you get fudge on the way home?
Did I get fudge on the way home?
Fudge, yes.
Yeah, so we went back down south towards Detroit, and on the way down, you pass through this great little tourist town of Mackinac, and there's Mackinac Island, you can take this ferry ride. We didn't do any of that, but it seems to be like the whole town runs on fudge, as you described it.
Yes.
When you're trying to convince us, every second place is like, Ma's homemade fudge, and Harold's homemade fudge, and, fudge and coffee, and fudge and fish. Like, it's like everything is fudge. What's with that place?
It's the fudge capital of Mackinac.
It's all 800 people who live
all
there.
All 800 people all make fudge. They have like little elves that make fudge deep down inside. And
we walked out supporting the local economy by, I think we bought 7 pounds of fudge or some ridiculous amount. Oh. I was using the little paper bag as arm curls while we were walking back to the car.
You know, here's the thing. That's not even a lot of fudge for the people who go up there. People will drive up from Ohio and stock up for the winter months. In fudge. There's a little town there not too far away near Traverse City called Interlochen. And Interlochen is this performance art thing. Like Jewel, the singer Jewel, went to Interlochen. A lot of famous people have gone to Interlochen. And so these tourists will come up and they will do the Interlochen thing. They'll go see Traverse City, Grand Traverse Bay, and then they'll drive up to Mackinac, which is not too far, and get their fudge. To the point where there's so many of them that if you see a car and an RV or a Class A, Class C RV, they're called fudgies. So anybody who travels up just to do the Interlochen Traverse City Mackinac circuit is called a fudgie.
Really?
So now you can enjoy yourself and know that you are now officially a fudgy. Because I'm sure a lot of people from Ontario come up to stock up on their fudge.
I think so. I was telling someone at work today, and they were all excited because they want to go next summer.
I thought, all for fudge. They'll drive 9 friggin' hours to get fudge.
Yeah.
But they'll drive 9 friggin' hours to get that variety of fudge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
it's good fun.
So anyways, it was a great event. I had a really fun time at that symposium.
What was your best part? What was your favorite part?
Because
I know what my favorite part
on
is.
On the Thursday before the event was the day you can lead these tours, or you can go on these tours. And so a bunch of us, the Canadians, we got put onto, which was really fun because it was all the Canadians were there. We were leading a trip along the Pritchard Rocks in that area. And it's super famous because it's all sandstone. It's wind-carved sandstone, so that you see sea caves, and it's the sandstone's different colors, kind of different layers. And so as the sun changes throughout the day, it changes color. Oh, it's just gorgeous. That was really fun.
Yeah, and all the participants on that trip had a blast with you guys. It was fantastic.
Yeah, for sure. You know, only 2 people cried at the end of that one, so we were happy with that.
And they were both Eric Ogar.
He cried going out and coming back.
He did. It was like the double rainbow guy on YouTube. It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, that's totally him.
He's, you know, I love the fact that my kids don't know his name, because my kids are up there, as you know.
Right, yeah.
And they don't know his name. They only know him as Captain Canada. My brother and sister-in-law came up. They don't even kayak. And they said that, you know, they refer to him as Captain Canada. I will say, oh, remember when you were talking to Eric? You mean Captain Canada? So I think that name is going to stick. And as a little, you should applaud yourself for this one, because as you know, I've been in the industry of kayaking for many, many years, maybe too many years. I should probably get out.
Yeah, more than 4.
More than 4, and you're out. So I've been kayaking for many, many years. My brother has never had an interest in kayaking.
Okay.
Until he went up to Grand Marais, and now he actually sat down at my dinner table tonight and said, "So that dolphin, I hear good things about the dolphin." And I said, "Jay, you've never paddled a sea kayak in your life?" And he says, "Well, you know, I've heard good things. I was thinking about going up there and trying the sea kayaking." To which I wanted to shake him and say, "Jay, I'm your brother. You get that, right? People kind of pay me to do this, and yet you want to go up to Grand Marais and hang out with Captain Canada."
You know what's happening? Your separated worlds are all colliding.
They really are.
Yeah, and that's just hitting you right in the core.
And by core, if you mean core, you know, my crotch, yes. Kicks me right in the crotch there. But he's got kayak fever like the rest of us kids, and there is nothing wrong with that. So
Yeah. Well, it was a great event. I had a really good time.
Yeah, I had fun. My favorite part was sitting around the campfire with the likes of you and Michael Party, Eric Ogard, Doug Neal, who's going to be our editor here very soon, which I think is fantastic. He's also going to be on the show talking about thermodynamics. But then we had Brian Hansel sitting around there, Ryan Rushton. We just had Steve Lutch was there at the campfire. Yeah. And all of us were getting liquored up, and I don't remember talking a ton about kayaking.
No.
Nope.
Except for Steve, who was telling great stories from like the 80s.
Even earlier. I love that. Back in the Stone Age, I tell you, you know, the Stone Age, it was a trying time in the Stone Age.
But the glory days of kayaking on the great Lake Superior back in the early 80s, early 90s. seemed to always be snowing and everyone was breaking their ankles.
That's because, oh, yes, that's true. Yeah. And then Jeremy Vore was there, of course, just totally getting into every story. It could have been the same story 15 times, and he was drunk enough that he was like, yeah, I remember that. Well, you remember that from like 3 minutes ago, dude. So, no, it was a fantastic time.
Dropped enough names.
I love the, well, you know, we're trying to pay our dues here.
Yeah,
I love Jeremy, though. I'm going to say Jeremy's name again because I knew him when he was a kid, right? And he was a really good paddler. He still is. But he knew he was a good paddler, so he's kind of hard to handle. But now that he's an adult, man, he's good, and he's just great. So if he listens to this, and I think he does, I'm saying it out on the airs, kids, Jeremy Vore's A-okay in my book. So
I figure that the only people, you know, 80% of our entire listening audience was at that campfire.
They probably were, now that I think about it. If I just do a romper room thing and say all their names, then we're done with this episode.
Yeah.
We can move along. But we're not done with this episode, David. Tell me more. I think it's time for, and correct me if I'm wrong, the news.
It's time for the Kayak Mainline News. Yes, your source for news all over the world, down the street or just outside your door.
Totally, we have some great news. So we were scouring it and found some great things. We have some animal news. We've got some weather news. We've got more crazy people news.
So. I love crazy people news. By the way, have you been following up on the guy getting shot in the butt in Florida yet?
It's the case is still open. Talked to the sheriff last week. Just to recap for those people who didn't do it, he was the canoeist that shot the motorboat guy because he got tipped over by a boat wave.
You didn't. Did you? You
didn't.
Nope. Okay.
You're ruining the story.
I'm just saying.
People need to know that we're dedicated to the story.
Okay. Then I am going to suspend my disbelief. What did the sheriff say, David?
Anyways, yeah, so I did some intense research. The case is still open.
Case is still open. Well, as long as you're following it, David Johnston, for Kayak News, that's
the apparently
important
Law
thing.
And Order is interested in picking up a story, turning it into one of their episodes. Bum bum.
One of their episodes. You ever notice how on Law and Order they always do that Law and Order nod to the camera?
Yes,
they just do the. I can't even do it because I'm obviously recording, but I actually did the head thing right here.
Bum bum.
Yep, where they get the information and then they kind of just do this one singular nod that drops their chin down. It's very dramatic. Anyway, we've got news. We followed up on. Clearly, you're still on top of this man being shot in the butt.
Yeah.
So bring us forward to news.
All right, let's start with the first one. We're going to go to the Netherlands. Come with me. Where, according to the headline, faulty weather forecasts could lead to fines in the Netherlands.
The deuce you say.
Let's see what's happening. So over in the Netherlands, people are upset because the weather forecasts are... This is unique to this one country.
Okay.
Very unique. That the weather forecasts are getting the weather predictions incorrect.
No.
Yeah.
What kind of socialist bastards are these people?
So they're upset. So apparently there's this... They're thinking about in Parliament of implementing a fine system to the weather forecasters if their predictions are incorrect.
What?
And where this came from was the Dutch Tourist Association is pushing for this because they're complaining that incorrect forecasts are causing considerable damage to visitor attractions in that no one's actually going to them.
I've got so much to say about this, but I think what I want to focus on...
I would expect nothing less.
Exactly. The Netherlands, they have like this sexually free society where you can buy weed anywhere. And they're all supposed to be these happy people. I mean, they're devoid of religious persecution for the most part and racism and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And they get free drugs when they want it, socialized medicine, and this is what happens.
They can't handle rain.
Right. You give anybody everything that they want, and they're going to be complaining about anything they can find.
Yeah. So apparently, the quote they found in the article, this was from the CBC, our local national news. What did they say here? Last week was really good weather over most of the country, but the weather forecasters were full of heavy rain and thunderstorms, so people stayed home. That's the head of the Dutch Tourist Association. So nobody went out and did anything because they were told it was going to rain. I don't know why they don't just look out the outside and go, oh, like here.
Right.
And go, every week somebody's messed it up.
Yeah, you'd think.
And just go do stuff. Yeah.
But. Well, first of all, the Netherlands are not that big.
Right. Right.
So, I mean, what are they crying about? You're right. They just stick a hand out and say, oh, it's not raining. Let's go walk to the park. Because they can't be that far from home if the weather changes.
Apparently, everyone's, as soon as they hear the weather forecast, they're canceling all their things and their trips and their beach hut rentals.
You know what they're doing is they're staying home and smoking weed and having sex is what they're doing.
I think so. And they're using that as an excuse.
Right. And so now the weather people have to get fired?
Yeah. They're the ones taking the bullet for the country.
The Netherlands folk, I'm sure you're fine people, but get a grip. Weather people are just doing their job. They're meteorologists, and nature is a bitch goddess. It'll get you. Exactly. So suck it up, sunshine, literally. And get back to the business of smoking the devil reefer and enjoying anonymous sexual partners and stop crying.
Yeah. So, anyways, that's that. We'll keep on top of that story as well.
Sure.
See what happens with it.
Oh, so, breaking news. Breaking news. As it turns out, there's still no update with the man being shot in the butt by the canoeist.
Really?
Yeah. Just want to keep you posted on that one.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, I already knew that because I've been researching it nonstop, but wow, I didn't know that.
Good to know. I just had to take an opportunity to say breaking news.
This just in.
Exactly. Today's episode is brought to you by P&H Kayaks, Warner Paddles, and Kokatat. Yes, these fine products are available in any proper kayak store or online, and you can certainly find them, use them, they'll make you feel happy, healthy, and you'll look and feel like $1 million. Folks, don't wait. You only have so much time to be on the water, you might as well use the good stuff. And these folks provide the good stuff.
So if you like to gamble with the things that you love, you better hope to the stars above. You'll be lucky,
let's see here. We've got, let's move to the Philippines. We're going to go into a theme of giant animals.
Is this more animal news?
Yeah.
Sweet.
Animal news, everyone who wasn't there loves animal news. Noah brought him in the ark 2x2 so we wouldn't have to hear so much animal news.
So we got some animal news. Here we go. In the Philippines, they recently caught a 21-foot-long crocodile.
Holy monkey butt.
Yeah. Previous record, 18 feet. So we smashed that record.
21 feet.
Yeah.
So, David, you spent some time with me up north here at the Grand Marais Symposium.
Yeah.
My camper that I had up there, 19 feet.
Wow.
Yeah.
You could put like 9 people in this crocodile. It sleeps 9.
You could go below deck. While he swallowed you, you could actually make dinner and look for a way out.
Yeah. Now, it's so huge, like, you can't even wrap your arms around its head.
Of course.
Because it's so big. But the article was kind of interesting. So it's going to go to a zoo because they found it.
It's still alive.
Yeah. But the best part about it is, let's send this to a zoo. But it's suspected of attacking several people and killing 2 of them. But let's send it to a zoo because that's going to be a good location. At least they know it's going to be active.
Right.
You know, because usually those ones are just sleeping on the rocks anyways. So this is going to at least put a show on it.
Let's keep that crocodile, though, away from the polar bears who throw rocks and break glass.
Right.
Because I'm suspecting sort of an Escape from New York sort of thing going on with the animals here. You put a 21-foot crocodile in with clear-thinking polar bears and monkeys.
Yeah.
And we got problems.
Now, speaking of giant long things again, so that's our 21-foot-long crocodile. But in BC, just this week, they caught some visitors from the UK, back in the old country. They just caught a sturgeon, a white sturgeon, 3.8 meters. It's a fishing story, so 4 meters,
right,
or 13 feet long.
13. Why did it have to be white?
Well, that's what it's called, a white sturgeon.
Can't we just stay away from the racism thing here? Just leave it alone, man. I mean, it doesn't. You don't have to, you know, pigeonhole people. It's yeah, a 13 exactly. foot. It should live on its own merit, 13 feet.
Yeah. Well, that's it's pretty huge. Cool because they were out with a guide, and they so 13 feet. They didn't keep it, but they took a bunch of photos and they let it go. And they feel that it was about 100 years old. Mm-hmm. They feel estimate it weighed 500 kilos, or as I looked it up online, 1,100 pounds.
Holy crap!
It was huge. It was so huge. The photo, the guy at the beginning said like he couldn't wrap its head. His arms around the guy, the fish's head. It was so big.
There's a lot of animal news going on where this one dude's running around trying to hug the head of other animals.
It's got really short little stumpy arms.
Why is this one? Yeah, why is this? Is this Hervé Villechaize who can't? For those of you paying attention, that was Tattoo on Fantasy Island.
Blade.
Little. So this guy's running around hugging big animals. Yeah. I'm just assuming it's the same guy. I mean, how many hugging animal head experts can there be in the world?
Well, they chopper him in. He's like the baseline measure.
That would be great. Yeah. What's your job? I hug animal heads.
Especially record keepers. So
record
they checked against
animal
the...
heads. He is his arms are indeed exactly 5 feet. So he is like, you know, a human tape measure. I like that. So what would happen if you put the crocodile in a pen with the giant sturgeon?
I don't know, but there's that movie that attacks like a big plane. That super crocodile. Oh no, the shark.
Mega shark.
Yeah.
But we have a sturgeon because this is, you know, obviously Canada.
Yeah.
And
so we got to go with our
fish.
We've
got a sturgeon, right.
Yeah.
And a crocodile.
But the other cool part about it is two things. They had no tags on it, so they don't think it's ever been caught before. Like, you know, research tags or anything.
Right.
And the other part was they checked against some databases, and they think that it was most likely the largest sturgeon ever caught in North America.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's kind of a cool little story.
So that one's 13 feet long.
Yes.
Okay. And that's the longest sturgeon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. If you had your choice, which one would you ride into battle?
The fish or the crocodile?
The fish or the crocodile.
Crocodiles are good, but the thing with crocodiles, you know, they bite onto you and they spin you around. I don't think I'd be able to hold on. That's the problem.
Okay. I see that.
How about yourself?
Oh, gosh. You know, it depends on if I had Aquaman-style powers. If I had Aquaman-style powers, I would totally ride the fish because I think that would be much faster. Crocodiles are really quick. They, you know, they run in sudden bursts, but at the end of the day, they're just crawling around. So you'd have this great ride for like 12 seconds.
You're right. And
then you'd be on a slow reptile. Right. But the sturgeon, I mean, okay, so you mentioned that he wasn't tagged, which means he's quick. He has not been caught yet. So he would be like the Dukes of Hazzard car. He's fast, man. I'm going
with
that.
That's true. Yeah. Though I think I'd probably go with, as our next story, I'd go with, as the headline is, Crazy Beaver Attacks Two Girls Swimming in the Lake, Leaving Them with Serious Injuries.
I love this story.
I think I'd go with the beaver.
I love the angry beaver story. You cannot go wrong with angry beaver stories.
No. I mean, you saw the headline. This is going to be great. So, young 8-year-old Annabella and her 11-year-old sister Alyssa in Lake Anna in Virginia, they were fishing. No, they were swimming.
Swimming, sure.
And a beaver came up and attacked them.
Have you seen beavers before?
Like, yeah.
Yeah, in the wild.
Yeah.
You ever been menaced by one ever?
No.
No. What they do is they chew on things and do cute little kind of human things with their hands, and then they waddle away like little British men.
That's true. Yeah. Or usually slap their tail and run away in fear.
Right. They're not aggressive animals. Like, my uncle has some property up north, and beavers often dam his little river. That goes through his house. And he's got to clear that for, you know, some unknown reason. I think just because he's kind of mean-spirited. But he will literally throw dynamite into beaver
to blow
dens.
Up the dam.
And they've never come after him once. You'd think if some dude, like, blew up your house several times, that'd be the guy you'd go after.
Yeah.
So I believe this story's a little bit incredulous. I think the girls were doing something.
Well, here's what I think. So they're out swimming. The beaver attacks them, basically clamps onto the thighs of both girls.
Both of them at the same time. Oh, okay.
And they had to and they had like these severe leg cuts. They had to go get, one had to go get stitches.
Yeah.
The other one, they were considering going and having surgery to re-put all everything back together again. But essentially, they're all got cut up.
Yeah.
Here's what I think.
Okay.
Skinny, pale little legs.
Yep.
Looks like a birch tree.
You're right. You're right. Yep. He was just going after the birch. He thought, this is a protected species. I'm going after it.
Yep.
This is my way. And, you know, they started to ooze, and, you know, he flipped out.
Yeah.
I like the fact, I like the idea, or I should say, I like how they finally had to chase this dreaded animal away. I don't know if you read that far in the story.
Which,
They got the beaver to go away by shooting it with a BB gun.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah, that's how ferocious beaver are.
Yeah.
Is that a pellet gun?
And then they had to bring in their uncle who shot the beaver.
Right.
So they're going to so they have a photo on the website of looks like the local picnic thermos filled with ice and a beaver. But they're going to test it for rabies because they think it had rabies.
Well, I would say, yeah, in all seriousness, I would imagine that that's the only way a beaver could get cranked up enough. Either that or somebody threw crystal meth in the water and it's all crazy-fied.
Yeah.
That would be my thought.
So, again, you know, like what we do every week, we give you another reason to stay at home.
Yep. There's no reason to go out in the water. You've got angry beaver, giant sturgeon. You've got 21-foot crocodiles lurking around. You have got polar bears. You've got, what else have we covered on this?
Just tons of sharks. Crocodile attack, like 15 sharks. Shark attacks.
Holy crap. Sharks everywhere. It's like, there was a dude recently
that
got bitten in half.
That bites you in your,
yeah. Did you actually make your own censoring noises there? That was good.
You know, this is a family-friendly show.
It really is. Goes after your boys, right? Doesn't
exactly.
Yeah,
that was last week.
Yeah, somebody in I think in Australia got bitten in half by a great white shark.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Stay
good
home.
Times there.
Stay home. Just listen to Kayak Mainline. There's no point in kayaking these days.
You know what we're doing?
What are we doing?
We're keeping people alive.
We're keeping people straight.
Yep.
We're saving lives.
Yep. You know who needs help?
Who does?
We're not quite sure. This is our last story.
Is this a prelude to our sponsorship? You know who needs help? Kokatat paddling. You know, thousands of people every year wear Kokatat dry suits, and these people are the real victims in the world because they need another one. So please visit our sponsors at Kokatat. Kokatat paddling gear, the best in the world. Oh, is that not where you're going?
Not yet, but we could go that way.
That was real nice. I thought that was like a Sally Struthers sort of moment.
Yeah.
Brought a tear to people's eye. P&H kayaks. Some P&H kayaks are made for the open oceans, others for surfing, but not everybody can own a P&H kayak. It's up to us to go out and make sure everyone can own a P&H kayak.
What type of ad is that?
I don't know. I was just making stuff up. I was trying to make, you know, shameless capitalism sound like you were doing a subgroup a favor.
Or, yeah, like a public service.
Exactly, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, no, I was going to go to our man in Utah who's currently walking around dressing as a goat trying to infiltrate goat herds.
I love this guy.
Yeah.
He's friggin' awesome.
Come with me again. Let's travel. We're going to Utah. Where? A hiker, Ben Lomond.
You sure?
Let's call him Ben.
How about Ben Lomond?
Lomond? I think that's the Canadian version of it. Anyways,
it?
they were looking at goats, sure. A herd of goats. And
I heard of them, yep.
Next thing I know, he's looking through the binoculars and sees one guy who's like, well, the goat's standing up and it's walking around, but it's dressed as a goat.
Sure.
A person is dressed as a goat.
Yep.
So the man appeared to be acting like a goat while wearing the crudely made costume, which had fake horns, a cloth mask with cutout eye holes.
Okay.
So this took place 40 miles north of Salt Lake City.
Sure.
And wildlife officials are expressing concern, noting that they're about to issue 60 goat hunting permits for the area. And they're worried the real goats will become agitated, attack the man, and even more, that he'll get shot. People thinking he's a goat.
Okay, if the cat wants to wear a goat costume and run around hanging out with goats, what's the problem?
I have no issues with it.
I don't either. And I think that it's a little disingenuous to say this might make the goats angry and they might gang up on the guy.
It's not given enough benefit of that. The goats are smart enough.
I have Scottish heritage. I know a bit about goats. More sheep. And they're not an aggressive group of people. They might nibble you a bit if they want your food in your hand, but they're not an aggressive type person.
What do you think he's doing out there?
Gosh, I mean, I personally, I think he works for Al Qaeda.
And he's definitely a terrorist.
I think he's trying to totally a terrorist. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind he's a terrorist.
That's a fully working sleeper cell right there.
If I'm being incredulous.
He's training goats.
If I'm being incredulous, I'm saying he's completely 100%, no holds barred a terrorist. And he's training, these goats to strap tiny little bombs on them and, go into the larger goat herds and, take out our food source from within. Because we all know that every Coney Island has a nice Euro sandwich.
Mm. Well, you know what he's trying to do? He's sabotaging the goat meat and ruining goat sausage.
Is that how it works?
Destroying the entire market from the inside.
Cutting it right down. Either that or he, I didn't think about this. The guy only saw one dude in a goat suit, right?
Yeah.
What if there were more?
Maybe it was like you remember that Looney Tunes sketch where
he was a coyote. He was really a coyote dressed
as a sheep.
Morning, Ralph. Morning, Sam. What he did, if he was to watch longer, he would see a sheepdog come out and punch the guy in the face and drop an anvil on his head.
Totally.
But he didn't do that. So he just saw it and he got freaked out, and rightfully so. I mean, so you're sitting out there watching goat herds. First of all, dude with binoculars watching goat herds. That's our first red flag right there.
Yeah, for sure.
So this guy's looking and he says, wait, that looks like was that a guy in a goat outfit? Right. And the guy next to him is saying, who are you to judge? You're looking at goats with a binocular.
Exactly.
A set of binoculars.
I think that's the guy we need to start talking
exactly.
to. He's the Al-Qaeda. You know what he's doing? He's doing research.
Yep. They're in cahoots.
Yeah.
And I will take every opportunity to say the word cahoots for sure.
It's a dangerous world out there, whether it's goats or beavers or big giant fish or giant crocodiles or weathermen trying to screw your trip over.
Yep.
Just stay home.
I really like this goat guy, though. Could you follow up on that one as well?
I think so. We'll add it to the list.
Okay. Yeah.
There we go. That's my weather for this. The weather.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. You'll get sued by the Danish government if you say weather. I think we're under contract not to say the weather.
Yeah. So there we go. News for this week.
Perfect. That was good. Folks, if you have something you'd like to tell us, please let us know by emailing us at kayakmainline@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter and let us know through there at Kayak Mainline. That's kayakmainline@gmail.com and Twitter feed Kayak Mainline. And if you enjoy what you hear, please leave us a favorable review on iTunes. And if you don't like what you hear, please write it down on a piece of paper, fold it up nice and tight, put it in an envelope, and then seal it and just, kind of sit on it for a few years and really think about it. All right, so we're going to move along to questions from the internet. The wild world of the internet is a place of mystery, and a lot of people get on there to try to find out answers to their questions that they couldn't possibly find out just by, asking somebody. So in the past few months, I've been asking for people to send me in questions, and I've gotten a laundry list of questions to answer here. And with my friend David, we're going to see if we can tackle some of the more hard-hitting questions. Are you good with that, David?
Okay. I'm ready.
Good. First question we've chosen for this week comes from Deborah. And Deborah sets up a scenario. Over 15 people at a club rescue class sitting passively in their boats when someone is upside down for 45 seconds and cannot release their skirt. One person finally went over to the bow to do a bow rescue. So the question is, that was the scenario. 15 people in a club all sitting around. Somebody flips over right in the middle of them. They're under the water for 45 seconds. Now we know that
And can't get out.
We know in the real world of 45 seconds to paddlers, that's actually like 12. But it feels like 45, right? So keep that in mind.
Okay.
Went over to do a bow rescue. Like when you get under the water, worked in a hole, you feel like you've been in for 2 minutes, and your buddies say, well, it's, you know, 5 seconds, really. So we know there's no, right. Every time someone goes under the water, there's no over-exaggeration to that. But so realistically, we got, let's say, 45 seconds.
Okay.
And it still stands. Finally, somebody goes over and helps him with a bow rescue. So the question is, why do people train for rescues, then freeze when one is really needed? And the follow-up is, how can they be helped to be more responsive? Which I think is a great question. I've seen this before. Have you ever seen this before?
Well, I've certainly thought about this whole idea of, you know, why do people freeze when something's right in front of them? I don't know. What do you think?
Oh, well, I've been reading a big book on the topic. And I really have, actually, and it's a fantastic book. I'm going to do a cheap plug. It's called Thinking Fast and Slow. It mentions kayaking not once.
Okay.
And it's a psychological book that reads like stereo instructions, but it's fascinating. And what I'm going to comment on with this is that people have two different types of ways to interpret information that comes to them. One is the first line of defense is that they answer with the information that they have readily available to them. And the second one is their calculating mind. When it gets past your rapid response of thought process, it gets into the back of your mind, and that's when all the real calculating does. That's when you figure out problems. Those are the types of it's the type of process when you're laying in bed and you're trying to work out a problem. Okay? So when people don't practice rescues and practice them with some intensity, that's how they respond to things. That's how
Right.
So that's how they respond to these situations. So somebody flips over. You've got 15 people, and they've all practiced their rescue very passively, probably having a good time, talking, not taking it seriously. So it hits their first part of their brain, and their response is, you know, and as we like to say, we do what we respond the way we practice.
Okay.
So it hits their brain, and immediately they go into a passive mode, which is, oh, somebody will rescue them. We're in a club setting. This is all the information I have. So we're in a club setting. Someone will be able to rescue them. I don't necessarily need to worry.
Right.
That's how it's been practiced. Now, all of a sudden, it becomes serious, and they realize that this person has been under the boat for a while. Then the second half of their brain kicks in. Okay? This is the calculating bit of their brain.
Mm.
And you can do nothing else while you're trying to calculate these things, which means if it makes it past the first part of your brain, you're basically caught in contemplation until you can work out a scenario, which could take literally a minute.
Okay.
So
the old, what do I do now?
Yeah, exactly. So now your brain is engaged, but while it's engaged trying to figure out what you do next, the person's drowning.
Ah, okay.
So that's my thought. How do you feel about that?
I think that can definitely work. I mean, there's people who, you know, they freeze up, and there's people who panic and that type of stuff. But you're right. It all comes back to, well, why does that happen? And that's training.
Right.
Or lack of training completely.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
How many times when you teach a rescue, even in a class that says this is a rescue class, how many times have you seen somebody yell over when someone flips over?
Like immediately?
Yep.
Oh. Hmm. I don't know, a bunch of times. But people still sit around and stare.
Yep.
And nobody knows who to step up to the plate.
I rarely, if ever, hear somebody yell over. I have to yell at myself, and then that triggers them to yell over.
Ah, right.
But that's something that we don't practice on a regular basis.
Right.
That little bit of communication, and that's your first step. Right? Mm-hmm. So all of these little things, if we don't train for them seriously, they're not going to come out when we need them.
Right.
So, so to you, Deborah, I would say, you know, you asked the question, how can they be helped to be more responsive? I would say, you know, really insist that people practice every good step that they, you know, every proper step that they can, and take it seriously and make it rote memory.
Mm-hmm.
So when it hits that first line of defense in your brain, your initial reaction is not to sit there and think that somebody else is going to do it. I would rather see 15 people rush in than nobody do it.
Right. And I think that sometimes that has to be an actual formal conversation.
Agreed.
And I, you know, this idea of people in clubs are usually kind of semi-strangers or complete strangers.
Possibly,
and so you always just think someone else is going to do it. But I think with your group, especially if you're moving towards like intermediate type conditions, you want to say, okay, this is what happens. When this happens, we need to do this.
Sure.
And, yeah.
I agree. So I think we've beaten that dead horse. Yeah, that's a really good question. So on to the next one. Darren asks, this is going to get us in trouble, boyo. Okay. How many Greenland rolls are actually useful?
44.
44? That's what you say?
Okay. 17.
I'm not really convinced I know. 88. You're just using agent
I'm trying to
names.
Find out what you want to hear.
Right.
That's right.
You're just using agent names from Get Smart that you heard. That's what I think. You know, I'm going to defer to this, and I am going to take out the Greenland
right
portion of that, and I'm going to say, I'll read it again, how many rolls are actually useful. And my opinion of it is that it's the one that gets you up. So one.
Yeah.
One roll right. is useful. The rest are just icing on the cake. It's not to say that you can't learn those rolls, for sure. But my opinion, just like the answer to the last question, you always go with what's first in your mind, and that's usually the first style roll that you learn.
Right, right.
So,
well, it, is, yeah. it comes back down to rescues and rolling. Rolling is like one of those ones that you get knocked. Like, you're in the water because something's happened. Like, this is outside of, like, practice where you're
right.
prepared for it.
Right.
So it's always going to flip back to that, either the first or second roll or the roll that you know the best.
Sure.
You know, somebody could learn 45 different rolls, and that mm-hmm. has its place for sure in the sense of you're comfortable upside down and you have lots of backups. But really, in my head, like, one or two styles for different types of conditions or maybe an injury or something – yeah, I think that works for so many people.
Right. The answer is you've got to be good at all 40-some-odd rolls that you want to do. You have to be really comfortable, and they have to be able to come right to you when you need them. Or
yeah.
you're just going to defer to the first one that you ever learned and the one that you're best at.
Yeah.
So sort of a loaded question, but I think it's a good one. I think people get caught up on the whole Greenland rolling kind of thing, the traditional rolling kind of thing, and they want to learn all these rolls with the expectation that they're all going to come to mind when they need it. Fact of the matter is the first one you use is the first one you use.
Yeah, exactly.
And
you know what? And you could tell which one it's going to be when you the panic one.
Yep.
It's because if you start to practice, the first roll you do is always the one you're most comfortable with.
Correct.
So you need to know that really well,
mm-hmm.
for sure.
Yep. And there's nothing to say that you shouldn't learn all of them. I mean, do what
yeah.
you want to do, man. That's what I say. Viva mm-hmm. la difference. Not to be confused with Viva Las Vegas, which I also agree to. So here's the question from Ken. Is it okay to wear underpants underneath neoprene paddling shorts? David, I'm going to throw that directly to you.
I'll give you a two-word answer to this. Cotton kills.
Wow. I don't think it mentioned that you have to wear cotton underpants.
Well, is there any other type? Tidy whities.
I'll tell you, I got a little pair of went out and did that trip to North Manitou and splurged and got a little Capeline underpants thing, some boxers, real
okay.
comfortable, and they're not cotton. They're you know, a wicking material, as the case may be. So, and I'm sure you know that everybody.
What do surfers do? I'm assuming they're just nothing,
right?
I defer to the experts.
Okay.
What does Kelly Slater wear?
Oh, nice. You know what? I'm going to say it's okay to wear underpants.
Yeah.
It's not going to help you with the thermal value of your neoprene paddling shorts, but if it makes you feel comfortable,
yeah.
What are you
going to
do?
Or, you know, you see a big wave coming,
yep.
it might keep your neoprene outfit a little bit cleaner.
Cleaner, right, yes.
Yeah.
Because, yes.
Those underpants are taking a bullet for the neoprene.
I like it. I like it. So, yeah, wear your underpants. Don't wear your underpants. I don't personally wear underpants
okay.
underneath my my neoprene.
I have a dry suit, so I never use the neoprene anyways.
Yeah, I don't wear neoprene as a rule. And by
right.
the way, kids, it's neoprene with an N, not neoprene. I'm fighting that fight for everybody. We all need to know it.
You're a trooper.
I do what I can. Last question we have is from Little Susan.
Okay.
Up from the far north from both of us. She's Canadian. We like her quite a bit.
We do.
Equipment question, and I'm going to read this out loud for everyone to hear. And if you find the real answer to this, it could earn you much beer. Of which I'm in. I hear you. Go on, Susan. Although Gore-Tex is supposedly magical in that it allows water vapor to pass through but prevent liquid water from penetrating, if you add pressure, say by a snug neoprene skirt tunnel or a tight pair of booties, I like the fact that she used a booty, can liquid water be forced through the membrane? And she capitalized forced.
Right.
David, do you have an opinion on this, or you just want me to fire away on this one?
Yeah, I don't know the science.
Well, here's the deal. Susan, because I love you so deeply, and I love all my listeners so deeply, I made a couple of phone calls to Coquetat and okay. to Immersion Research, both of which I had wonderful conversations with two of the cats who put all this together. And the short answer is, yes, liquid water can be forced through the membrane. However, it has to be at a really high pressure value.
This is forced, like, from the outside in.
Well, yes, forced from the outside in, correct. And that pressure is roughly the equivalent to 125 feet below sea level with equivalent okay. water. So the answer, the long answer is yes. The shorter answer is no. We are, as kayakers, we are never applying the pressure that we need to force water through there. Now, you will get water through it if there's a tear in the membrane. So how it works is you've got two pieces of material basically sandwiched around the Gore-Tex membrane.
Right.
And as long as those materials are in good shape, and the more to the point, the Gore-Tex membrane is in shape, good shape, you're never going to have a problem. However, there could be a tear in there, an inconsistency that happens with normal wear and tear of using your neoprene tunnel. And it doesn't happen all that often, but if you get a compromise, then yes, it's going to let water back and forth. But that's a compromise, a breakdown of the membrane itself.
Right.
A tear in the membrane. It's not, you just can't possibly do it if the membrane is in good working order.
Well, now they use, in the case of Coquetat,
yeah.
I know specifically, they use a different Gore-Tex, a much stronger, more, you know, let's call it an industrial version of it, than you would for your typical raincoat. So immersion Gore-Tex is, like if you had the Gore-Tex you would get for your coat, it actually leaks under less water pressure than the dry suit.
I believe you're incorrect, but I will check this out. That because I hadn't considered that factor. But what I did get was that one of the things that people don't quite understand is that a Gore-Tex jacket is much different than a Gore-Tex dry suit, in the sense that it's got pit zips, it's got everything else. So there are other points of leakage to it.
Right.
Gore-Tex will not leak. That is sort of the guarantee that Gore-Tex uses. It will right. not leak unless there is a rupture in the membrane. So it doesn't matter. There's, I don't think, and I could be way off. You know, you and I just highly speculate on the show, often.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't think that there's a difference in Gore-Tex. I think there's a difference in the material that covers the Gore-Tex. So, for instance, Coquetat uses Cordura
right.
on wear spots, so that's going to take the brunt of it, so the Gore-Tex is not going to hit it. Mm-hmm. Gore-Tex on a walking around hiking jacket, you might as well have a parka on. You know, it's right. just heavy and probably terrible to use. And that's why they don't do the whole suit in Gore-Tex, because it's just too much.
Mm.
So I don't think there's different levels of Gore-Tex. And in fact, when I talked to IR, they're pretty cool about things. They don't use Gore-Tex. They use another waterproof, breathable material. But, you know, they even said Gore-Tex is held to such a high standard that it's, you know, it's the bomb diggity, yo.
Right.
However, you know, there are cheaper ways to do it to achieve roughly the same results.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a matter of choice on that fact. But, Gore-Tex, I think Gore-Tex is Gore-Tex is Gore-Tex. But I'll have to check into that, Susan. But the answer to your question is no. You need to have so much pressure that... you know, you need to be hundreds of feet below the surface of the water. Simply by just compressing a booty or a neoprene skirt is not going to do anything for you in terms of compromising the Gore-Tex. Now, if you have a rupture in there, then that's a different story.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a good question.
Hey, and I actually got to do some research myself. So it's not like the guy getting shot in the butt with a with a, you know, from a canoeist.
I mean, that's a whole level of investigative journalism.
Right. I can call up and ask my questions. You actually have to get on scene and wear the hat with the press thing on it.
So far, the budget hasn't come through to go down there, so I can't do any further investigation until I'm physically on site.
Right. You know, I did have somebody, and it caught me off guard because I was at when I was at Grand Marais. Somebody came up and said, "I'm collecting my bottles," and I said, "What?" He said, "Yeah, I'm collecting my bottles for you." And I said, "Oh, that's nice. What are you talking about?" And they said, "For David." And I'm like, "Oh, right. Yes, I forgot all about I made a wild, outlandish claim, and now somebody has actually listened to me." So, yeah, there are people out there. There's a whole cadre of people saving up bottles so you can fly down to Florida and do the follow-up.
Yeah, what we can do now, the homework for people is blank checks.
Sure.
That's the next stage. So you've collected your bottles. It's time to cash them in and just send us the money, but then a secondary blank check.
Right. Right. So if you have any blank checks just laying around the house, well, we just send it to them. We'll be kind. We'll be kind. So, yeah. That was so those are some good questions. We'll have some more. And by the way, feel free to send more in. We are at kayakmainline@gmail.com or Twitter feed kayakmainline. By all means, let us know if you have some more questions. We would absolutely love to hear from you.
Do we have any do you have any retractions that we need or apologies or
no apologies
other things and mistakes
yet
that we made last week?
Although I do have to share this. Ray, our little friend Ray, cute little Ray from Wawa.
Exactly.
He did give us a critique. Do you remember his critique of our show?
Oh no, I tuned him out.
He said, and I believe I'm quoting Ray properly. He said, geez, when you guys start talking about kayaking, I just tune right out.
I tuned him out.
Yep, exactly. So, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
The Wawa Goose.
The Wawa Goose. I think that's his new nickname.
Yeah.
I
have a really brief update from a story that we broke to the world
a couple episodes ago. Yes.
About it, what they believe is a UFO at the bottom of the Baltic Sea.
Oh, the Millennium Falcon rock.
Do you remember that?
Yes.
We chatted briefly about it. Well, they now feel that it's more than so. Is this weird rock for not a rock, but some type of formation under the sea that when cameras go near it, they mysteriously break down.
Right.
They now feel that it might be a top secret lost Nazi weapon.
Awesome. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So divers are exploring the UFO-shaped objects in the Baltic Sea, say the strange curved object, which does look like the Millennium Falcon, by the way, might be a Nazi device lost beneath the waves since the end of the Second World War.
In the Baltic Sea.
Yeah.
That still has the power to turn off cameras.
Yep. So apparently a former Swedish naval officer and World War II experts have revealed the structure is 200 feet by 25 feet.
Sure.
Similar, not as big as the Millennium Falcon, but certainly Nazi size. Anyways, we're on top of that story still.
I don't know what's more disturbing, is that you're continuing to report this story or that you actually knew the dimensions of the Millennium Falcon enough to be able to say, well, it's not quite the size. I don't know where Chewbacca and C-3PO would play chess.
They do feel this could be one of the most important historical finds in years.
Sure. Yep. Sure. So there's this rhetorical argument, how do I put this? It's not an official argument, but it's just one of those things that sort of an underground thing that the first person in an argument to bring up Hitler, or the Nazis loses the argument. If they are now already assuming that this is a Nazi thing, they've already lost the argument. They're out.
Right.
In my opinion, folks. Again, I am going to say, this is bunk.
It's on the internet.
So it's got to be
true. But anyways,
true.
I'll keep on top of it.
Good.
Any new updates?
Sure. Sure.
I'll bring it to the people.
And I really want you to do that. Because, you know, and as a true skeptic that I am, if it turns out to be an old Nazi warplane or something, I'll be the first to admit that I was wrong 100%.
Yep. I will await to see that apology in writing.
Love it. So what do you got coming up these days here?
I have a couple of courses that I'm teaching around here, some skills courses, things like that. Things quiet down for a little bit. In August, I'm off teaching an advanced kayaking course up in Parry Sound, just 3 hours north of Toronto. How about yourself?
Oh, gosh. I'm very excited.
Things just wind up for you pretty soon.
They do, but they're still you know, bound up. So I'm flying out on Sunday. I'm going to Vegas for 3 days. Okay. Of all things non-kayaking related, I know you're thinking Vegas and kayaking go hand in hand, mm-hmm. like mushrooms and peanut butter. But I'm going to go out there and I'm going to see the wonderful Penn and Teller show, and that's really all the Excellent. Plan that I have. Yeah, I'm not going to do any gambling, nor am I going okay. to find a lady of the evening to enjoy because it's not really my way. but I am going to, I'm going to go out to Vegas for a couple days, and then I'm going to fly out to Salt Lake City for the great outdoor retailer event, which is always fun. I get to see a lot of friends, get to see a lot of people from around the country, and more to the point, I get to see all the new gear that's coming out. And I've got a list, first time ever, I've got a list of things that I want to check out while I'm out there.
Really?
It ought to be fun. So I'll be going for about a week.
What are you looking forward to the most?
Well, personally, all right, this is just between you and I, David, and who's ever okay. listening. Get close to the mic.
So six people are going to hear this?
Six people at least. So there's a stove out there. It's a wood-burning stove.
Okay.
It's about the size of a jet boil, which I love the jet boil, so I'm not going to get rid of that. Don't freak out. But it's about the size of a jet boil, and it's got a little converter on the side. So you pick up sticks, and you burn it, and you cook your meal. So it's just a regular old sort of fire-burning, wood-burning stove. Now, the heat that gets thrown off goes into this converter, and it will charge your iPhone or an iPad.
Oh, yes. I heard about that.
Yeah, buddy. So it produces electricity from the heat. So I could be out in a remote area, and I can be feeding it and still listening to, Biz Markie sing, "You Say She's Just a Friend."
That's the most critical part.
It really is. When I'm out in the wilderness, I want to know that I can get a hold of my Beastie Boys whenever I want it.
That sounds awesome.
So, yeah, I'm really excited about it. I know it's goofy as hell, but I'm really excited about seeing that. So that's – and I may – if I can get one and buy it right then and there, I might just do it. They're about $130.
Wow. Well, yeah. That's great. So, I saw some photos online for it. I thought that seems like a really neat design.
Right. I'm almost willing to buy it just so we can do a review on it.
Yep.
So that's what I got. All right, kids, that's all I got. What do you got? Nothing? Anything?
Nothing.
More?
Nope.
All right. Well, I think we will bring this puppy to a close, if that is okay with you, Mr. Johnston.
Yeah.
The true brains behind this outfit. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you once again for listening to this edition of Kayak Mainline. My partner, as always, is...
David Johnston from Toronto.
And I am Kelly Blades, and we folks are out.
You've been listening to the Kayak Mainline Podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please tell a friend or tell five. This shouldn't be a secret just for us. That thing you did with the German Shepherd, the surgical tubing, and the bananas Foster, that's probably a secret you want to keep to yourself. But the podcast, let's tell everyone. Thanks for listening.